Welcome to Ring of Fire. I'm Farron Cousins. Coming up on today's show, the Supreme Court this week ruled that Donald Trump has to stay on the ballots because, of course, only Congress has the authority to kick a president off a ballot. I'll tell you all about what that ruling actually means. And Ted Cruz, of all people, got some devastating poll numbers this week that show that his Senate seat could, in fact, be in trouble. And speaking of troubled campaigns, Lauren Boebert reportedly had to cancel a campaign event recently to make sure that her ex-husband did not dump all of her belongings in a pond on the family's property. All of that, and of course, Donald Trump's continued mental decline coming up on today's show. And if you want the full show every week, folks, please sign up and become a member at ROFpodcast.com. And for Ring of Fire every day of the week, go subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/TheRingOfFire. On Monday, the United States Supreme Court did what everybody thought the United States Supreme Court was going to do, and they ruled that Donald Trump cannot be kicked off of state ballots using the 14th Amendment. Now, the Supreme Court had heard arguments in this case on February 8th. Less than a month later, on Monday, March 4th, they handed down their unanimous decision, which means even the liberals on the court went with this decision, saying that no, states, you do not have that authority. Only Congress can determine who is eligible for the ballot under the 14th Amendment. So the Supreme Court said that people can be kicked off using the 14th Amendment if they're a state candidate. States, you absolutely can do that. So that's a bit of a plus, right? Good for the states. They do, according to the Supreme Court, have that authority. But if you want to kick somebody off a federal ballot, then you're going to have Congress go ahead and approve that, which, as we know, because Republicans hold Congress, that ain't going to happen. So the Supreme Court, all nine justices, gave Trump a major, major victory. But it's a victory everybody saw coming. Okay, this is not unexpected. This was not shocking. This was not even devastating, because I think at this point everybody knew this is what the Supreme Court was going to do. But yes, this does officially mean that any state that has kicked Trump off the ballot, most recently we saw it happen in Illinois last week, it's over. It's done. You can't do it. If you don't have congressional approval, you cannot do it, and you're not going to get congressional approval, so it's over. So now we move forward, right? That is the only thing we can do at this point. We can't hem and haw and be upset. And I mean, sure, I guess we can be upset at the Supreme Court. Yeah, but there's nothing we can do about it. We cannot change this decision that was handed down, and we've got to move forward. You know, I mean, don't look in the rearview mirror in this particular instance. Trump is staying on the ballot. We all assumed it was going to happen. Let's beat him, right? That's all we can do at this point. Let's beat him. Let's make sure that enough people turn out to vote against him. Notice the language I said there. Vote against him. I'm not telling you to vote for a specific person. I'm just telling you vote against Donald Trump. So that's what we do. And that's what should have been the plan all along. We should not be relying on these court cases, especially with the right tilt of the court, to save us. We have to do that. This is in our hands. And I don't want to in any way undermine the legal challenges that these groups have gone to kick Donald Trump off the ballot. They did phenomenal work. And I do think the Supreme Court screwed the pooch on this. I think they're 100% wrong. There is nothing in that 14th Amendment that says that Congress has the authority to do this. This was a bastardization of the 14th Amendment by the United States Supreme Court. The ruling is wrong. It's just flat out constitutionally wrong. But we can't change it. So move on. That is the only advice I can give. It is the only thing we are even capable of doing. It's over. He's on the ballot. Let's beat him in November. Even though Donald Trump got some good news from the U.S. Supreme Court on Monday, he got some pretty bad news from the court system in the state of New York on Monday as well. Because his former chief financial officer, who only left the company a year ago, by the way, even after spending 100 days on Rikers Island, Alan Weisselberg accepted a plea deal to felony charges of perjury for lying in the New York fraud trial and lying to Attorney General Letitia James. This is a pretty significant development in this case. Now, this plea deal was worked out with Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg, who, of course, is prosecuting Donald Trump later this month. Weisselberg, however, is not a part of the upcoming criminal trial, and the charges against Trump, the covering up the Stormy Daniels hush money payment, it's not related to anything that Weisselberg is pleading guilty to. So Weisselberg's plea deal here is not expected to affect the criminal trial in any way. Now, what it does do is it really screws Donald Trump over if he wants to have any hope whatsoever of getting that verdict against him from Judge Arthur Engoron overturned on appeal. His guy, the guy that he was paying monthly payments for his $2 million severance package for, went on the stand and lied to benefit Donald Trump. Do you think any appellate court in this country is going to look at that and be like, well, I still think Trump should... Nah, that ain't going to happen, folks. Especially not in the New York court system. This plea deal for Weisselberg basically kills Donald Trump's appeal. Like, it's over. I mean, Engoron, for the record, had already written his opinion in such a way that legal experts are essentially calling it appeal-proof. Bulletproof is the word they've actually used. But now with Weisselberg admitting he lied to investigators and he lied on the stand for Donald Trump, holy hell, dude, you are not going to win that appeal no matter what. You are screwed. You better come up with that $454 million in the next couple weeks or else you're going to start losing all of your assets. That's what this means to me. But here's the thing. Before he handed down his ruling, and this is where I think this is really significant, Judge Engoron had gotten wind to the fact that Weisselberg might be working on a plea deal with prosecutors in New York. And he had sent a letter to Donald Trump's lawyers, including Alina Haba, by the way, asking them, like, hey, what do you know about this appeal? Like, or not appeal, what do you know about this plea deal? Like, I've heard it might be a thing. Does anybody have any info? Because it was reported by the New York Times. Trump's lawyers, Alina Haba and the other guy whose name escapes me at the moment, basically sent a letter back to Engoron telling him, don't believe everything you read. This is ridiculous. Letitia James is like, look, I don't know anything about it. I haven't heard anything, but, you know, we keep our ears open. Because Engoron said, listen, before I make my judgment, I want to know if this guy lied on the stand. And I need to know if he's in the process of working out a plea deal because that will affect my judgment. Obviously, Engoron did not get that information before he handed down his judgment. If he had had that information, the penalty against Donald Trump would have been even stiffer. Because remember, he did not go for the full 370 that Letitia James asked for. He went for 350. He knocked it down 20 million. If Engoron had had wind of this, probably would have been the full 370. So Trump saved himself $20 million by Alvin Bragg slow-rolling this BS as he always does, which still pisses me off. But it is what it is. Weisselberg's going down, and this pretty much kills Trump's appeal. Ted Cruz got some shockingly devastating news this week with the release of a new poll from the University of Texas at Tyler. According to this new survey, 41% of respondents said they are backing Ted Cruz in this year's Senate election from the state of Texas. But another 41%, an equal number, said they were going with Democrat Colin Allred, who is a state representative at this point. Allred is very popular in the state of Texas. And this new poll shows that him and incumbent Ted Cruz are literally tied neck and neck at 41%. But there is a glimmer of hope for Ted Cruz, and of course a glimmer of hope for Allred. Because 41 plus 41, as I'm sure everybody realizes, does not add up to 100. No, it leaves you 18% short of 100. So there are still 18% of voters in the state of Texas who basically say, I don't know who the hell I'm going to vote for. So technically, either candidate could still win in a landslide if the election were held today, because those 18%, they're going to vote for somebody. They just haven't made up their minds yet. But at the moment, undecided voters do tend to benefit not the incumbent, but the challenger. Because the challenger is the one that, according to this same survey, a lot of voters say, listen, I don't know enough about the guy. I don't know who Colin Allred is. Once I know a little more, I'll make my decision. Now, if they were already going to break for Ted Cruz, they would say, well, listen, we know who Ted Cruz is. Guy's been here for, you know, 16 years at this point. We know who Ted Cruz is. It's not 16. I don't know the exact number. Sorry. But they don't know enough about Allred to say, yes, he is better than Ted Cruz. But they know enough about Ted Cruz to say, let me see what else is out there. That doesn't benefit Ted Cruz. So it's not the fact that he's neck and neck with his Democratic challenger. It's the fact that you've got almost 20% of the voters saying, well, let me get to know this other guy before I make my decision. So is Ted Cruz going to change who he is as an unlikable human being in the next few months before the election? Probably not. He is probably still going to be Ted Cruz, who at the moment in the state of Texas has an approval rating, approve versus disapprove, -9 points. So Ted Cruz's approval rating in the state is 9 points underwater. Meanwhile, Mr. Allred, his approval rating is +12 points. So there's 12% more people who say they like him versus they don't like him. So Ted Cruz has a likability problem. His Democratic opponent does not have a likability problem. They are neck and neck, and you've got 18% of people who are saying, I don't know who I'm going to vote for. I need to know more about Allred. That benefits Allred. Now, I don't want to get anybody's hopes up. I think the Democratic fever dream of turning Texas blue anytime in the next 10 years, I think it's not even close to happening. Okay, we saw it in the 2022 midterms in Texas, like, oh boy, we can do so. Oh God, we got slaughtered. Yeah. So don't get your hopes up. Okay. Texas is Texas. Texas has not changed. Texas has gotten worse since 2022. So at the moment, we got a small little victory. It's interesting, but it definitely doesn't mean that Ted Cruz is on his way out. Well, something remarkable actually happened on Sunday, folks. And that remarkable thing is that Nikki Haley not just won a Republican primary, actually becoming the first woman in the history of the United States to win a Republican primary. So that actually is a pretty big accomplishment. But she won the Washington, D.C. primary 62.8% to 33.2%. She doubled roughly what Donald Trump received in that primary. And even though there's very few delegates and this victory doesn't matter at all for Nikki Haley, Donald Trump went absolutely ballistic following the results of this primary. He got on Truth Social, as he always does, to show the world just how crazy he is and how angry he is that Nikki Haley won this largely symbolic victory. Here's the first post that he put on Truth Social. Bird Brain is a loser. Record low performance in virtually every state. DeSantis easily beat her in Iowa for a very distant second place, and then she ran up to the podium before he had a chance to do so and claim victory. I enjoy watching the bird disavow her pledge to the RNC and her statement that she would never run against President Trump, a great president. Well, she ran, she lied, and she lost big. It's funny that you would actually say she lost big after she just kicked your ass in Washington, D.C. But don't worry, because in a subsequent post on Truth Social, Donald Trump explained why he lost, and it's not because they prefer Haley, it's because, well, he wanted to lose. Here's what he said in a follow-up post. I purposely stayed away from the DC vote because it is the swamp, with very few delegates and no upside. Bird Brain spent all her time, money, and effort there. Over the weekend, we won Missouri, Idaho, and Michigan. Big numbers. Complete destruction of a very weak opponent. The really big numbers will come on Super Tuesday, also way up on Crooked Joe. So yes, I mean, today's Super Tuesday. Donald Trump's probably going to sweep every state, and this victory that Nikki Haley scored will technically be mentioned in history books. Again, first woman to ever win a Republican primary, so that is a big deal. But why is he freaking out? I mean, why does Donald Trump feel the need to go out there, insult her, Bird Brain, the bird now, so we're just shortening it to the bird? It's because that's how fragile this man is. That is how weak and pathetic this man that millions of Republicans have put up on this pedestal. He is the weakest Republican I have ever seen. He has the thinnest skin of any person I have ever seen in my life. Like, you can't handle losing something that, in your own words, doesn't even matter. You feel the need to go out there and have an absolute mental breakdown about it because it does matter to you. And you're pretending, oh, it doesn't matter at all. Let me just spend all night ranting like a lunatic on Truth Social. Give it up. You are weak. You are pathetic. You are thin-skinned. And everybody knows how to set you off. And that is why I am not afraid of Donald Trump in this year's elections. Yeah, the polls are not good for Biden at all right now. Polls are going to change. It's early. I think he does need to be concerned, but I don't think he needs to be wetting his pants about it. Donald Trump, on the other hand, is wetting his pants every 2 seconds when somebody says something or does something he doesn't like. Trump's going to implode. It's just a matter of time. On Monday, following the Supreme Court's decision to not let Donald Trump be kicked off the ballot, Alina Habba went on Newsmax to not only praise the Supreme Court, but to also express a little bit of panic that Democrats in the House of Representatives are actually taking the Supreme Court's advice. See, here's what happened. In the ruling, obviously, the Supreme Court said that disqualifying somebody from the ballot, a president, a federal candidate, states you can't do that. That actually has to come from Congress. Congress, according to the Supreme Court, would have to pass some kind of legislation to make that a thing. So Democratic Representative Jamie Raskin went in the media shortly after that and said, okay, we'll do that. We will draft legislation that spells out clearly what an insurrection is, what support for an insurrection is, and who could possibly qualify as engaging in an insurrection and therefore be disqualified from the ballot. And that's where Alina Habba got angry, because Democrats are literally doing what the conservative-controlled Supreme Court is telling them to do. So on Newsmax, Alina Habba was shown by host Eric Bolling this clip of Raskin saying that he's gonna follow the court's orders, and that's when Alina Habba got angry. She responded to the clip saying, quote, I think that this divisiveness, this continuous double, triple down is what is hurting the Democratic Party, to be honest. I think that the American public sees it for what it is. The fact that he just went on TV and said he was going to be with Debbie Wasserman Schultz as his ally says it all. I think that we really need to embrace today to try and remember who we are as a country, to ignore the noise that is people like that going on with Dana. And I truly can say that I just don't pay much mind to it anymore. Today was a good day for this country and for the Constitution, and it does not matter what your politics are. Everybody should embrace that. Because if we have a Republican president or a Democratic president, it shouldn't matter. Nobody should be dealing with the ordeal that President Trump has dealt with. The political and legal war, lawfare, frankly, that they've done to him has been unfair. It's un-American, and today was a really big step in the right direction. Did any of that make any sense to anyone listening to this? Because that statement made absolutely no sense to me. I don't know what her point is other than to be upset that Jamie Raskin says, hey, we're going to do what the Supreme Court told us to do, and we're going to try to pass legislation so that we can be on the level. Like, you can't be mad at that. Like, the Supreme Court said, if you want to do it this way. And Democrats said, okay, we'll do it that way. They weren't pouting. They weren't whining and complaining. They said, all right, if that's what you say we have to do, that's what we'll try to do. Now, let's be real honest here. Obviously, the Democrats do not control the House of Representatives, so there is a 0% chance of any legislation passing this year that would clearly define what an insurrection is and who has engaged in one. So Alina Habba is like freaking out and ranting like a lunatic for no reason, because it's not a thing that could happen. But she put together whatever word salad it is that she just vomited out on the air and made it very clear why she's not that great of a lawyer and why she's lost every single case that she has tried for Donald Trump. She can't make a point. She clearly has no idea what in the hell she's talking about. And as per usual, she's getting mad at people for actually doing what the courts tell them to do. On Monday of this week, for the third time, Donald Trump sent his legal team to beg Judge Lewis Kaplan to please give us 30 more days to pay the $91.63 million bond that we have to pay in order to appeal the verdict of the E. Jean Carroll defamation trial. Now, they didn't just beg the judge, please give us a 30-day stay, but on Monday they said, give us the stay and tell us in a few hours, judge, that we can have that stay. Like, don't sit there and take all week. Don't take a couple of days. We got a due date coming up Thursday. You got to give me an answer right now. And on Monday, of course, the judge said, well, I'm not going to do that. You know, you can demand all you want. This is actually the kind of thing that probably takes a couple days. I mean, you know, you're filing this motion 3.5 days before the due date. So, you know, you got to give me some time to grade your paper here. So the judge essentially smacked down their request for a 30-day stay before he even had to smack down their request. But here's what's interesting about this. As I said, this is the third time Trump's lawyers have gone to Judge Kaplan, who oversaw the case when it was in trial, and begged him, like, please give us more time. And every time so far, the judge has been like, no, you haven't made a compelling reason why I should give you the stay. So Trump has till Thursday. Is he going to pay the $91.63 million? Or, as Joyce Vance, a former federal prosecutor and MSNBC legal expert, said earlier this week, if he doesn't, then Roberta Kaplan, E. Jean Carroll's lawyer, can next week start asking the judge to seize Trump's properties. We're literally at this point, folks, days away from the possibility of Donald Trump's assets being seized by the court for this E. Jean Carroll trial. And that doesn't even begin to touch whether or not they're going to have to seize them for the verdict in the New York fraud trial. Like, by the time Letitia James, which I think that's coming up mid-March, by the time she has to get around to possibly seizing Trump's assets, is there going to be anything left? Right? I mean, is E. Jean Carroll going to own Trump Tower? Like, what's Letitia James going to snatch? Like, well, dang it. You already got the good ones that are actually worth money. What am I going to do? And that would be a hilarious problem for Letitia James to have. And I'm sure she would also probably find the humor in that. Because Donald Trump can't pay both of these bonds. He's not going to get a reduction, even though Trump's lawyers have asked, well, what if he just puts up $25 million instead of $91 million? And E. Jean Carroll's lawyers, by the way, to their credit, have made it clear to the court, like, no, you can't just take him at his word. We know he's got that other massive verdict and he cannot afford to pay both of them. Make him put the whole amount up. So Trump's in serious trouble. And pretty soon, I mean, possibly within a week from now, his properties could begin being seized if he doesn't come up with that $91 million. Earlier this week, prior to Super Tuesday, Donald Trump decided to embrace his inner streamer, and he actually did a live stream. He wasn't necessarily taking questions from, you know, the comments section, but Donald Trump did a live stream address to his supporters that was, of course, filled with falsehoods and just some of the most incoherent things you've ever heard. One of the falsehoods, that he said during this live stream was actually pointed out by the Biden-Harris campaign on Twitter, where Trump said, quote, his economy was the greatest in the history of the world. The economy under Donald Trump, the former president claimed, was the greatest in the history of the world. Not just the United States, folks, but there was never an economy in existence anywhere on this planet that did better than the U.S. economy from January 6, 2021, or excuse me, January 6, 2017 to January 6, 2021. January 20th, I'm sorry, I'm getting my date screwed up. But anyway, sometimes it happens. January 6th, obviously on my mind at the moment. But Trump claimed his economy was the best in the world. Really? I mean, the Biden-Harris HQ did fact check it. And they said Trump left office with the worst jobs record since the Great Depression, and President Biden has since presided over historic economic growth. And yeah, Donald Trump loves to talk about how great the economy was under his watch, and he forgets that in the last year of his administration, at the height of the COVID pandemic, we couldn't buy toilet paper. We couldn't buy paper towels. You couldn't buy any paper goods, really. Soup was sold out at the grocery stores. The supply chain issues that, of course, Republicans love to blame on President Biden occurred during Trump's tenure. They started under him. Like, that was a Trump issue, but everybody wants to blame Biden for it because we have such bad short-term memory here in the United States. But in addition to the falsehoods, he also said some things that were just flat out weird. Like, at one point, he mentioned that people are coming into this country, a comment he had started making last week in his trip to the border, where he said, of course, last week that people were coming across the border speaking languages that nobody knows of. So he decided to continue that talking point during his live stream, where he said that they're languages from Mars. The man that used to be the president of the United States, that had the nuclear codes, could order a nuclear strike at any second, says that people are coming across our border and speaking languages from Mars. I don't even need to add a comment to that because that's insane. If you heard somebody on the street corner standing there saying, migrants are coming over speaking Martian language, you'd cross the street so that you wouldn't have to be near that person because you'd be afraid of them because you would think something is seriously wrong with them. And yet, in this instance, it happens to be the man that's about to be the Republican nominee for president saying these crazy things. He also, as one user pointed out on Twitter, said at one point, I don't need votes. We have all the votes we need. So he's literally out there the day before Super Tuesday telling people don't vote, or at least don't vote for me. I've got enough votes. How does Trump think this works, right? Like, does he think he just gets to carry over all of the votes he has in the primary to every election afterwards? And be like, no, 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 I've got plenty. Don't worry about me. You go vote for somebody else. I've got a big old pile of votes here. I'm just going to bring them to November with me. The man is unhinged. The man is a pathological liar. And it still, to this day, after 8 years of this crap, blows my mind that anyone in this country can look at him and say, yep, that's my guy. The guy saying people are speaking Martian language, that's the one I want in charge of the nuclear codes. According to multiple new reports, Lauren Boebert was forced to skip a campaign event last month, just a few days ago, that's when the month ended, because her ex-husband, Jason Boebert, had threatened to throw all of her belongings into a pond on their property. So according to the reports, Lauren Boebert had to skip a campaign event at a diner in Colorado. She instead sent her campaign manager to go and make an appearance for her, and she had to go check and make sure that her lunatic ex-husband had not thrown all of her belongings in a pond. Now, according to the campaign manager, by the way, Lauren Boebert was never actually scheduled to show up at this thing. You know, that's overblown by the media, which is something we hear from Republicans all the time. So maybe she was supposed to show up and maybe she wasn't, right? We can't get a clear answer on that, but I'm damn sure not going to take her campaign manager at his word, because that's always what Republicans say. Like, nope, the media is making it up. And then most of the time turns out, no, they're not. But either way, Lauren Boebert had to frantically go back to the property that she still has with Jason Boebert, the ex-husband. Their divorce was finalized in October, who has already been arrested twice in the last couple months here. She had to go back to that property to make sure this guy didn't throw all of her stuff in a pond. So whether or not she was supposed to show up at that event is irrelevant, because she did have to lose a day of campaigning in a very close primary race to deal once more with her family drama. Now, let's also not forget, as I'm sure everybody is aware, that last week her son, Tyler Boebert, was arrested and, according to police in Colorado, basically was the leader of a little crime ring that committed multiple felonies and multiple misdemeanors. I think in all, he's facing about 24 charges. And that's just everything that's happened to Lauren Boebert in her personal life in the last, like, 2 or 3 weeks, folks. The point is, Lauren Boebert is nothing but drama. She has some serious problems with her entire family. And to be honest, if she wasn't such a horribly hate-filled human being, I would have nothing but sympathy for her. In fact, I almost hate to admit, part of me actually does feel sorry for her, because she is going through a lot. But a lot of it she brought upon herself. A lot of it is because she had a very unhealthy marriage. And I think, my opinion here, I think she's a bad mother. And I think that all of these horrible decisions she has made throughout her life finally blew up in her face within the last, 6 to 12 months. And that's why we're seeing all of this drama with her. But the people in Colorado have to ask themselves the question. First of all, did she do anything for the district she represented for 2 terms? The answer to that is unequivocally, no, she did not. She, in fact, voted against legislation to do good things in her district. That's number one. Number two, knowing that she doesn't do anything for the district, and she has nothing but family drama that brings negative publicity her way, is this what we want in Colorado's 4th Congressional District? That is the question the voters have to ask themselves. And I don't care what your politics are. If this were a Democrat that was embroiled in all this crap, I would be saying the same thing. Obviously, here at Ring of Fire, we have talked extensively about Democratic Senator Menendez and how he should resign. He should be forced out of the Senate. But this goes beyond politics at this point. Lauren Boebert should not be trusted to represent the people of Colorado. They trusted her for 4 years and they got nothing in return. They've got embarrassment. They've got horrific stories popping up in the headlines every few days about her and her family. They deserve better. And they have the opportunity to do better. But if they don't seize this opportunity, then they get what they deserve. And that's it for the free portion of this week's Ring of Fire podcast. But if you want the full show every week, sign up and become a member at ROFpodcast.com.